News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. And by the way, listen, if you find yourself getting outside the range of our AM, FM right here at WVNN, which pretty much means you're out of North Alabama, Southern Tennessee, then just know that you can go online from any device. Just go on your smartphone, your iPad, your computer, wherever, and go to rightsideradio.org. That's our website, rightsideradio.org, and click on Listen Live. And no matter where you is, there we is. That's why our audience is so broad, and we're glad of it. Hey, I've got a caller right now already on line five, so let me just go jump in there and grab it. Line five, Brian from Huntsville. Hey, Brian, Phil Williams, how you doing today?
Doing mighty fine, sir, and I hope you are too.
I am well. Thank you, sir.
You were talking about honoring others. Let's go back around the Hebrew time. Let's go to Greek time, and Homer and the Iliad honored both sides of the Trojan and the Greek War. And he showed honor to everybody and what they did right during the entire thing. Wonderful read. It's a long one. But I can show honor to my enemy if he shows honor to me, or if I can show it to him first, if he's doing what he feels he's doing right, whether it's not. And even when Apollo guided Paris's arrow, at Achilles, I guess Achilles wishes he had his heels polished at that time.
Well, and then that point well taken, man. I mean, you're not off base. There's times when you're gonna fight, but there's a and I don't want to say fair fighting. I don't mean to imply that way, but what I'm saying is there's a time when there's actually been honor among combatants, and you saw it. I mean, you saw things like in World War I when on a Christmas Eve when they ceased fighting, and the Germans and Americans and the British celebrated Christmas together in the middle of the trench wars. You saw it. Like at the tail end, true story though, at the tail end of the Band of Brothers movie, when the German officer was allowed to keep his sidearm and to retire from the battlefield with honor. So I get it, Brian, and I appreciate you bringing that point. And I also think though that there's folks in our community who are not necessarily our enemies, but they don't have anybody saying, "Hey, thanks," or "Great job," or "I saw what you did. Nobody else saw it, but I did. And you did well." So, hey, Brian, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate you being in the audience as always. So, yeah, Copper, grab the mic there. We got a minute. Sure. Your thoughts, honor. I mean, what comes to your mind? Just give me random thoughts. What are you thinking?
Well, I think about the chivalric code and how people would talk about how unrealistic it is to give your sword back to your enemy, but even if we don't do that these days, the idea of there being a code that you can respect between one another, like he was saying, and to not be nasty about it, I guess. A fight can feel nasty or it can feel necessary, but not cruel.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in the story that I told, too, about Dr. Cottom with Colonel Hendrickson, and by the way, Dr. Cottom was not our enemy. He was our ally. I'm really not even talking about battlefield combatants. I'm talking about those people that are walking past you on the sidewalk that no one takes the time to say, "Hey man, thanks for your service," or "Thanks for that thing you did," or "You are appreciated whether you know it or not." You know, just jumping in there and not letting it go unnoticed or go unannounced. I think it's important that every once in a while we have to stop, we have to get outside ourselves, and we have to look at the person who may not be the person we would normally even talk to, and you know, point it out. I think it's important. But anyway, well, it is missing from much of our society right now. So listen, when we get back from this next break, folks, though, I want to tell you, I just pulled a study down. I took a look at a study done on Defense Weekly, taking a Heritage Foundation study of the U.S. military, grading our strength. Where are we in the world categories of armies? Are we strong? We certainly are. Are we still the premier fighting force in the world? Certainly. Are we where we should be? No. And we're going to look at the, I'm going to walk you through the world. All right. So as we look at this study, which ranked the final year of the Trump administration's military readiness, I want you to picture where we are today in the world and the things that have begun happening or cascading, in a sense, in different venues around the world, all of which impact our foreign policy and national security. And so I just felt like it was time. A lot of times I'm focusing on state-related issues. I'm focusing on the vaccine mandates, of course, quite a bit lately. And I just felt like I need to take a break from that because there's so much stuff right now that, in my opinion, is flying under the radar that if we don't pay attention to it, and I know I've got the attention right now of all of you folks here in this defense community. We got a bunch of you right now in this audience I know that are veterans. I know that have families that are still in service like ours. And I know that there's a bunch of you in the defense contracting, and we got a bunch of green suiters right now in the audience. Pay attention. When we get back from this break, I'm going to be talking about national security and taking you a walk around the world and telling you some things that should be more in the headlines than they are. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, just plain right. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Hey, let me tell you about my friends at Otter Creek Farm real quick before I go any further. Otter Creek Farm, wow, that place is so cool. Charlene and I go out there quite a bit. We were out there for a wedding just a few weeks ago. We've got any kind of events that have been out there that we've attended, corporate retreats, going to dinners out there, which is amazing because their culinary staff is like bar none. Their facilities are beautiful. Their grounds, hundreds of manicured acres. But also, I go out there and go shooting sometimes. And if you like to hunt pheasant and quail, it's one of the premier wing shooting destinations in the Southeast. Now, I've said all that. You got to check the website. Because when you look at the website at OtterCreekFarmstead.com, OtterCreekFarmstead.com, you're going to see I ain't kidding. This is not just like me blowing smoke here. This is legit. This is like an oasis in the middle of North Alabama. It's been featured in Garden and Gun magazine. It's one of the premier destinations in the Southeast United States. And I'm just telling you, it's so good that Donald Trump Jr. came there, stayed overnight recently, very quietly, but he did. Had a good hunt the next day for quail, I believe. And folks, you need to check this place out. OtterCreekFarmstead.com. That's the website. All right, so listen. I said number one on the triple dipper was that I was going to spend some time talking about national security. I just kept seeing and hearing things that I felt like were only on the fringe of the news. Like right now, sitting here in the studio, I'm having a cup of Just Love coffee while I go through the machinations of doing this show. I've got the TV on, and so the big flat screen sitting over here to my side, and all Fox is doing is talking about the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. I mean, they're not talking about anything else. It's just literally live play of the trial. Now, by the way, that has been some more kind of a trial today. I'll just take an aside here and tell you, as an attorney, I'm just thinking that prosecutor, somebody needs to take him out back. He's just a punk. Every time he does something, he's just like, hey, how rude and how much can I do for the cameras? And the judge has literally ripped him a legal new one several times today. And I don't mean like a little bit. Like, wow. If I were the attorney, the prosecutor, I would be thinking, I'm no longer welcome in this courtroom. But all that to say, the news is not covering a lot of things that are happening around the world. So let me start with this. National security. Are we secure? Well, issues like force modernization and troop morale and recruiting and retention, those are all things that gel together plus more into our force readiness. And so I'm looking at an article right now. This has got a little bit of age on it. This is last year, all right? This one came out of Defense Weekly. It was looking at a Heritage Foundation's Index of U.S. Military Strength for 2020. And don't let your eyes glaze over. This is important, all right? This is big doings. So one of the things that the Heritage Foundation does, among many other things, is they study defense. And they got some great writers and researchers over there, and they put together a report that ranks, in this case, ranks our military strength, all right? And it wasn't everywhere I would want it to be, truthfully. Now, granted, we were at the tail end of a 20-year war, and all conventional, I mean, all the army that I grew up in, the army of the Cold War, it went out the door on 9/11, and for 20 years everything changed, to include weapon systems, to include procurement, to include tactics, techniques, procedures, all of it. But here we are looking at where do we stand in the world? And so as I'm looking at this article, I'm reading that the Trump administration and congressional Republicans at that time actually had one of the better grades that they had had in quite a while. And I find myself wondering, how are we going to fare on the 2021 Heritage Foundation Index of Military Strength? Well, in this particular case, overall, the report ranks each of the four services as marginal, essentially giving us a C grade, all right? The most notable change in the rankings, it says, was the move of the Army, which went, in terms of readiness, from strong to very strong, which was the highest rank among all the different services. It says, though, here's the categorical culmination of the entire report. America's military, it says, still falls short of the ability to fight two major wars at the same time. We are basically what they called a one-war force. They went on to praise the efforts of the Army and the Marine Corps to transform themselves to face both greater power competitions and a tighter budget environment, but said that America still must address existing vulnerabilities. So I look at that, and I think, all right, gee, Manetti, a two-war construct. Is it possible to have a two-war Army? I don't know. I mean, and those of you out there, by the way, in military parlance, you know that our readiness improvements have really ramped up. I mean, this thing actually cites the fact that we did invest heavily in rounding out our Army Brigade combat teams. We went from having 15 of them, of our 35 BCTs, at an acceptable level of readiness in the last index they had, to 28 of them being acceptable this time. That's a huge jump, all right? But nonetheless, they still believe that we are, in their words, U.S. military in strength is below what is needed for the two-war construct. That is disturbing when you consider what the world looks like right now. Threats are not diminishing simply because our military is trying to modernize. All right, so here's the deal. What I want to do for a minute here is I want to walk the earth. Go with me, all right? We're going to walk the earth. Let's take a trip around the world. What else is happening out there in the news? If that was our report a year ago from the Heritage Foundation, which I trust, if that was our report a year ago, how do we rank now under the Biden administration? And if that was our report a year ago, how do we rate now under the Biden administration in light of changes in world security? Let's take a look at some things here. CBS report came out 5 days ago. Iran claims that it has doubled its stockpile of enriched uranium with nuclear talks set to resume. Iran is claiming it has doubled its nuclear stockpiles. However, that is not just Iran. The article I'm looking at from CBS says that in September, the International Atomic Energy Agency confirmed that Iran had boosted its stocks of uranium enriched above the percentage allowed in the 2015 deal. They now have 463 pounds of enriched uranium. It's not technically weapons grade, but it puts them on the, basically on the path. Like, basically it's like all the shortcuts are now ready, and they are ready to jump into the final piece of what it would take to weaponize what they've got right now in terms of enriched uranium. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, the guy who helped us so much in the Afghanistan situation, Secretary of State Antony Blinken warned earlier this year that unless the pace of Iran's nuclear agreement violations was checked, it could reduce the breakout time hypothetically needed for them to make nuclear weapons to a matter of weeks. Weeks. So what they've got right now is they have more than doubled their stockpile of enriched uranium, and our own Secretary of State is saying they could break out, in a sense, to create weaponized nuclear forces within a matter of weeks. One expert quoted in the article said, this is a very good time for Iran to seek additional concessions. There's very little coercive elements available right now. In other words, the Biden administration is not applying the kind of pressure that's going to make Iran blink. All right, next. So with that going on with Iran, what's happening in that region? All right, looking at a story that came out today on the Epoch Times. Epoch Times headline, Israel preparing to strike against Iranian nuclear facilities. Dateline, Jerusalem. The head of the Israel Defense Forces warned on Tuesday that an attack on Iranian nuclear facilities is being considered. The IDF, this is Israeli Defense Force, The Israel Defense Force Chief of Staff Avi Kohavi said the Knesset's Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee is accelerating operational planning and preparedness to deal with Iran and the military nuclear threat. Are you hearing this? Remember we had the Abraham Accords just less than a year and a half to 2 years in the latter parts of the Trump administration. Remember, he was only there for 4 years, by the way. I know some of you feel like Trump was there for 20, but he was only there for 4 years. He accomplished in some ways what some couldn't have done in 20. He literally went in, and as his foreign policy was such that he drove Iran into a back-on-their-heels posture while he got others in the region to align themselves in such a way as to sign peace deals with Israel that no one thought were ever possible, moved our embassy to Jerusalem, and now here we are just a year later. Iran is emboldened. They've doubled their uranium stockpiles. And Israel is announcing that they are preparing plans to potentially take out Iran's nuclear program. An article that substantiates that comes out of the Times of Jerusalem. IDF chief says the army is accelerating its plans targeting Iran's nuclear program. This came out just day before yesterday. It goes on to say in this particular one, his comments come as the Israeli Air Force is resuming its practicing for a strike on Iran's nuclear program. He goes on to say the IDF will continue to act to remove threats and will respond forcefully to any violation of Israeli sovereignty. And it's almost as if they are stepping up into a war footing. Now, let's walk around the world for a minute, shall we? What else is going on? Well, there's Taiwan. Taiwan, the island nation that China refuses to call a nation, just off the coast of China, just this week, and I don't have any more than this to say it. All I have is a headline and a blurb. But just this week, it's reported that as of Monday of this week, a group of U.S. congressmen has arrived in Taiwan on a military plane, marking the third U.S. delegation to visit the Silk Road Island since Biden took office. In other words, we're there trying to make a show, a presence, that we are intent upon defending Taiwan. Taiwan, though, is under threat from a China that is gaining far more ground than it ever had before. A China that feels emboldened. When we come back from this next break, let's go ahead and take that short break, Copper. We're going to keep this walk around the world. I'm going to tell you what Trump says about how he believes that China is impacted by the Afghan pullout. What Assad is thinking about Israeli airstrikes in Syria. And then the big question, the wild card in the world, North Korea, on the brink of a famine. What's that going to do? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, talking about national security. We'll be right back. News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. All right, let's continue that walk around the world for a minute, shall we? So, talking about national security. All right, I walked you around a few places. Like, first of all, looking at our national security grading from the Heritage Foundation last year, not this year, last year. Haven't got the report yet for this year. Look forward to seeing it. However, as I look at it, it says that we're certainly not prepared, in their opinion, and I think it's accurate, not prepared for a potential two-war conflict, meaning different geographic parts of the world explode and we have to address both of those. Can we go in two different directions at once? Would we have to? You may be asking, why would we have to? Well, that's part of the walk around the world. So I just spent time showing you that Iran is emboldened. Iran is doubled its stockpile of enriched uranium. They're weeks away, according to our own Secretary of State, from being able to potentially create nuclear weapons. Israel is saying it's planning its attacks, and it says that they will not allow them to obtain nuclear weapons. Meanwhile, you've got things happening in other parts of the world, not the least of which is the Afghanistan pullout. Because keep in mind, I think one of the most devastating aspects of the Afghanistan pullout, I mean, there was the human factor, there was the ability to know that what we had done was worthwhile, and was being denigrated by our own leadership. And then there's the other factor is, what did it do to us in the eyes of the world on a national security standpoint. And what it did was it indicated to our enemies, because we do have enemies, by the way, it indicated to our enemies that we are in a different posture right now, that we are in a weaker posture, that we are willing to go ahead and just take the body blow and say nothing about it. And just an article that came out yesterday on Fox, looking at this one, Trump slams Biden's surrender to Afghanistan and warns that China could take Bagram. Now, I've been to Bagram Air Base, been in and out of it several times, and I'm just going to be honest with you. When I first saw it, it was nothing but dirt and tents.